call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Senator McKinnon is out on medical issues. So today we have, we're meeting in the Senate Finance Committee room in the Capitol, Tuesday, February 13th. Today we're going to be reviewing the university's FY 19 operating budget, Senate Bill 44 appropriations, operating budget, and loan funds. Present at the table, we have the Vice Chairman, Senator Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Stevens, and Senator Olson. We should be joined shortly by Senator Machicki. With that, at the end of the table, we have President of the University of Alaska, Jim Jensen, and Michelle Rizik, the Vice President of the University Relations. Is there anything that anyone would like to announce before we proceed? Seeing none, please proceed, President.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to members of the Senate Finance Committee. We very much appreciate this opportunity to present to you the Board of Regents FY19 operating budget and to provide an overview of deferred maintenance issues and in support of questions or in response to important questions that have come from members of the committee. Joining me is Michelle Rizik, the Vice President of University Relations, and I will talk largely about the operating budget request. There may be some issues I can respond to on the capital side. Michelle is an expert on the budget and on capital issues. We also have Scott Bell, who is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. On the line, I believe, so that if we really want to get technical, we've got technical people available here this morning. Last year, in 2017, the state of Alaska recognized the 150th anniversary of the purchase of Alaska from Russia. 5 years before that, same president, Abraham Lincoln, passed a bill through the Congress called the Morrill Act, and it created the land-grant colleges and universities in the United States. And we, as of 1915, are one of those land-grant universities. I'll talk about the fact that we really didn't get the land that we were promised when we were admitted by Congress to that category of land-grant institutions. But I open it that way because land-grant universities across America have this mission that you see here, the three-part mission of education, research, and service. And all of this is in order to support economic development. That's what President Lincoln had in mind back in 1862, and it's very much what we do today and what research universities across America do today. Now, while this mission is very similar to missions you would find in Michigan or Oregon or wherever else across the United States, our mission is specific and focused on Alaska. Our educational mission, the courses, the programs that we provide are focused on meeting the needs of Alaska. Our campuses and the campus locations is an example of our focus on the needs of Alaska. Our research, likewise, focused on the North, on the Arctic, on issues that are specific to and relevant to Alaska. We're very proud to rank number one in the world in research on Arctic subjects, and that's not only a nice thing from a reputational standpoint, it brings quality into our classrooms, it brings money, a very strong return on investment to the state, but it also focuses on relevant issues, issues that that affect us here in the North. And finally, service, outreach to the people of Alaska. So it's not just about what happens in our classrooms and in our laboratories, but the value of the University of Alaska is spread all across our state through cooperative extension, marine advisory programs, 4-H, on and on and on. I think you certainly are familiar with the shape of our state and where our campuses are. three universities, 12 community campuses, and a number of learning centers, serving a state 2.5 times the size of Texas. You all know well that we, if transposed on the lower 48 states, would touch the Atlantic and the Pacific, that half of our campuses are not accessible by land, but that our campuses are in the main population centers of the state, again, serving the needs of Alaska. I note here, too, there are many other activities that happen, particularly research activities all across the state. And then with the advent of instructional technology and online courses, I'll touch on that a little later in the presentation this morning, we provide educational services to people all across the state, even if they're not resident in one of the communities highlighted here. In terms of our legal authority, slide 4, two references in the Constitution of the state. I refer to the university, creating the University of Alaska. Of course, we pre-existed statehood in 1935. The territorial legislature named us the University of Alaska, and prior to that, back in 1917, we were the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. So really, all, with that that strong history incorporated into the Constitution. And there are a number of statutes, of course, that that affect the university. Program areas, this is organized by those three major mission priorities, education, research, and service. So you see here the number of students annually served directly, nearly 30,000 this past year. Close to 4,600 degrees and certificates, endorsements were conferred this past year. Then on the research side, you see invention disclosures leading to commercialization, and I'm very pleased with some of the progress we're making on that front. On the service arena, you see the number of folks touched, about 11,000 young people in Alaska through our 4-H programs, and then publications, how to do X, Y, and Z, practical guidance for Alaskans, over 178,000 of those. And then, of course, support for local businesses, small businesses, particularly all across the state. In terms of our costs recuperated, in terms of education costs recuperated, tuition amounts to about 16% of our revenue. $135 million a year come in to the university through tuition and fees. On the research side, it varies, but generally between $4 and $6 come into the state from outside the state based on each single general fund dollar that goes into our research activity. And then on the service side, fees and other sorts of support, particularly philanthropy, results from this outreach to Alaskans. All of these functions are critical for our mission to support Alaska, to educate Alaskans, provide opportunity for Alaskans, contribute to economic development here in the state.
Mr. President, can you address what impact has the two new science buildings, the one in Fairbanks and the one in Anchorage, what impact have they had on education and research for the university?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. They are sterling facilities. Initially, they have a significant impact on recruitment of students. They're beautiful buildings with absolutely state-of-the-art classrooms and laboratories. So enrollments have been very strong in both of those programs. Actually, there are numerous programs at UAA in engineering and at UAF in engineering. The UAA facility opened 2 years ago. The UAF facility just opened up literally last month. So classes just began there, and we had a very nice ribbon cutting at that facility. The Alaska Center for Energy and Power, for example, is headquartered in the new engineering facility at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. That is a leading applied research organization that benefits Alaskans all over the state. I'm thinking of Senator Stevens. They've consulted extensively in Kodiak, in the alternative energy area in rural Alaska. So lots of positive things there. Engineering is clearly going to continue to be a critically important workforce training area for the university. And I would note also, we sometimes hear about competition between our universities. There has not been more collaboration between programs, between campuses, than in engineering in my time as president. Their community advisory councils meet together. The deans meet with the other deans. We're now doing course sharing. They're even talking with each other about when one school is going to hire a new faculty member, they consult with the other university on that. So a very positive set of developments. They're working on common course numbers, common course descriptions to ensure ready transferability of courses from one of the universities to the other. And finally, more than you asked for perhaps, Mr. Chairman, but finally, 2+2 programs. They now are cooperating on mining engineering. So a student can study at UAA for a couple of years, get the engineering basics down, and then go up to University of Alaska Fairbanks and get the degree in mining engineering. And again, very important occupational area for the state.
Senator Bishop.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. Just a quick one. I don't know if you've got it at your fingertips or you can get back with me later on it. The 11,000 youth that are engaged in the 4-H programs, do you track to see how many of them go on to graduate high school and enter into university?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we'll need to get back to you on that. If I were forced to speculate, it would be that they would probably have a very high high school graduation rate and a high college going rate. But we'll get back to you with real information there.
Mr. Chairman, the reason for the question is to I'm pretty sure you're right, but I just want to go back to a trend back when I had another job with the state in pushing career and tech ed around the state and working in collaboration with the university. And we've seen the direct benefit of two school districts in particular, Northwest Arctic and Bering Straits, where after they embraced career and tech ed wholeheartedly and jumped in with both feet, their graduation rates went from 68% to 82%. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Please proceed, Mr. President.
Well, thank you. Just last one last note on this slide. I would just note the shares of the total university operating budget that go to education, 72%, research, 20%, and service, 8%. And then also the share of our total budget that comes from undesignated general funds, and it's roughly a third. Maybe a little bit more there, comes from general funds. So we're able to leverage the state's investment in other funds for the university. A little history here. This is where we are sitting in terms of the state operating budget today, and starting with FY14 there in 378 in undesignated general funds. Today we're at 317. So it's a $61 million year-over-year reduction. The cumulative reduction is $145 million. And of course, this has had a significant impact on our operations, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. The operating budget request from the Board of Regents is at $341 million. The governor, of course, is at $317 million. We'll be going into the $24 million delta in this presentation this morning. I would note that the $341 million Board of Regents request is still 10% below the operating budget approved back in FY14 in non-adjusted dollars. Here's some of the impacts of those reductions. I'm looking at slide 7 now. We have 1,183 fewer employees today at the University of Alaska than we did in the fall of 2014. The distribution of those reductions, rough leadership category was reduced 16%, the staff about 14%, faculty about 12%. In terms of organizational unit reductions, so I would follow that red arrow down at the bottom of the slide here, the statewide administration has been reduced in headcount 36%, in budget 37%. The average across the university system, 14%. So the in percentage terms, surely the biggest hit has been taken by administration, and particularly statewide administration. Next slide here, slide 8, addresses just some of the academic program reductions, suspensions, or eliminations over this period. Over 50 such program reductions, suspensions, or eliminations have been taken, and here are some examples of those programs. These are obviously more or less controversial. Some of them have more or less connection to workforce needs of the state. Some of them were relatively low enrollment programs, we're now getting to the point where programs of strong interest and significant enrollment are being reviewed for discontinuation or suspension. Strategic Pathways, and I'll talk more about that in just a moment, is the process that we went through, an extensive system-wide process we went through to look at how we are structured and how do we step up in meeting the needs of the state with less money. Are there structural things that could be changed? And here are just a few examples of some of the decisions that were taken coming out of the Pathways process. We reduced three schools of management down to two, consolidating a lot of our purchasing and procurement, streamlining loads of administrative processes and systems across the university. Also, we've moved to one college of education. We'll still have education faculty at Anchorage and Fairbanks, but one dean, one sort of administrative structure, so that we've got a more coordinated statewide approach. There are many other examples of improvements made coming out of the Strategic Pathways process, but just a few examples.
Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to move ahead if you are going to cover the College of Education and the impact it's going to have on teacher education. If that's later in your presentation, I'll wait.
Well, through the chair, Senator Stevens, I do plan to talk about it because it's such a high priority for us, and so I can address some of the changes we're planning to make there. And there are a number of items and strategies in the operating budget request that go to support that.
Thank you.
Very ambitious goal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Please proceed.
Thank you. This slide, rather busy perhaps, but this summarizes the process of and what came out of the Strategic Pathways process. Again, this was an 18-month process, 230 faculty, staff, students addressing various issues. The top section of this slide really is the roof, if you will. So the mission, the objective, the principles and strategy are the overlay of the University of Alaska system that covers everything that we do from Ketchikan to Kotzebue. And then at the bottom here, courses, programs available across the system, that's the foundation. And then the pillars that make up this university are the three universities, and you see that they are distinctive. So what we're trying to bring together here is the benefits of one University of Alaska system and the benefits of three distinctive universities, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Southeast, supported, of course, by our community, critically important community college mission all across the state. This, I think, does a good job of communicating to folks where we are similar and where we share and also where we focus and specialize. And I think that's one of the benefits of a university system. If we were all homogenous, then I think we would lose some of the special distinctiveness of each one of our universities. So that's the balance that we're striking here that described on this particular slide. The over 100 options were generated by those committees I mentioned to you, and those are now in the process. Decisions have all been made by the Board of Regents, and those decisions have either been implemented or in the process of implementation.
We have been joined by Senator Machicki. This morning he was out on other state business. Welcome, Senator.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Thank you. One thing I would like to just emphasize here is with the, again, the increase of online courses and programs, almost half of our students take courses now from more than one of our universities. And so having common systems, common administrative structures is critically important. And it also enables us not to be redundant with some kinds of specialized, expensive kinds of programs. If we have one of them, then that can be accessible to students wherever they are in the state with that new technology. Now, we still have struggles in terms of information technology access to certain parts of the state, rural parts of the state in particular, there are improvements, as you know, with broadband infrastructure in Alaska, and hopefully that will continue.
Could you address the ANSAT program?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The ANSAT program is thriving, and it is innovating. It is, as you know well, we reach out into seventh grade, into all across rural Alaska, and we have some urban Alaskans who are participating as well, but the real focus is rural Alaska. And we provide intense, deep learning experiences, intensive learning experiences for rural Alaska youth through high school and through college. So they take majors, you know, in engineering, math, science, et cetera, but they're given great supports during the summers while they're in high school. And they get internship opportunities with employers, and they have tremendous success rates. So it's a very strong program. A few years ago, when funding was reduced, we cut a little deeper and reallocated additional support to the ANSET program. In the budget here is a line to support the creation of a acceleration high school, actually in Anchorage, an acceleration academy, so that urban Alaskans would have the opportunity to benefit from the supports that the ANSET program provides its students.
I know it's a very successful program, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering, is this unique, or are other states looking at the success of the concept that this program brings?
Mr. Chairman, other states definitely are. I'd say it was about a month ago I spoke to a group at the ANSET building in Anchorage. There was a group sponsored by the National Science Foundation, and there were maybe a dozen universities from across the country, Illinois, Arkansas, Hawaii, who were there looking at the ANSET model for potential implementation there. The National Science Foundation is very pleased with the program and has actually provided grant support to the ANSET program. And it's also attracted considerable private support because of its effectiveness.
Senator von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope you didn't just answer this because I was thinking about lots of things. ANSEP, I know that there's a lot of efforts to prepare high school kids to enter into ANSEP. And when you say prepare, isn't you guys go out to the different communities all around Alaska and start talking with these kids as early as middle school, and you've got yes. the middle school academy and so forth. But I understand, I'm hearing waves, or not waves, I'm hearing talk now that there may be discussions of doing a high school residential program in Anchorage on the campus to prepare kids to go to ANSEP. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator von Imhoff, we're not looking at a residential program nor a high school per se. We're looking at a program that supports high school kids. We're not providing high school, but we're providing university coursework to those kids and providing supports to those young people. So it may be a subtle distinction, but it is an important distinction. So we are working with the State Department of Education and Early Development on that program. There's private sector support for that program. There are some UAA resources available for that program. So that it is in development and planning as we speak.
Senator von Imhoff.
Thank you. If you feel comfortable sharing a little bit more in regards to that, meaning we have 8 high schools in the Anchorage area. Are you going to have 8 programs in the 8 different high schools, or are you looking to have a centralized place? Because I know the Anchorage School District had something called the Middle College.
Mm-hmm.
Is it along that line, whereas students leave their high schools and go to a centralized location for the day to take these specific classes?
Through the chair, Senator von Imhoff, it would be more along those lines. So there would be a specific location right near the UAA campus. It's very, very close. It's right between the Alaska Native Medical area there and the UAA campus and APU, so it's right there. Students would be coming to that location each day and then taking university courses on the UAA campus through the day. And happy to provide a summary of the program. We do have that available.
Thank you, Senator von Imhoff. Mr. President, please proceed.
Thank you, sir. So as we look forward and setting the stage for the plan and the budget in support of that plan that the Regents have developed, we are really seeking to build a culture of education for Alaska. We believe, and I know you all know the tremendous assets that this great land has in terms of resources and people and cultures and opportunity. But we also at the same time face tremendous challenges, not least of which is our fiscal challenge. But I would just note here our education attainment challenge. Historically, this has been a problem in Alaska, and it continues to be a serious issue here. We have a low high school graduation rate, a very low college going rate. In fact, I believe that we rank 50th in the country in college going, 47th in high school graduation rates. So those are real significant challenges for us here, and this has historically been the case. This is important. I'm sorry.
President, does that low college rate include in-state and out-of-state, or is that just in-state?
Both, sir. Yep.
Thank you.
Yes. And, you know, when you look historically at what happens in states with low education attainment and countries with low education attainment, you end up with high health costs, low life expectancy, high crime, high unemployment, low incomes, low levels of economic development and diversification. It's a bold move, I believe, on the Regents' part and the university's part, but our mission really is to serve the state, and we believe that by increasing education attainment, it'll take a while, but we'll be able to help bend that cost curve on health costs. We'll be able to bend that cost curve on public safety and many other aspects of our life here in Alaska. We have, I believe, demonstrated that we can make tough choices. We have certainly made them. I just described some of those difficult decisions that have been made by the board and the university. And I think also, as I go through the plan here in just a moment, you will see that we are tying ourselves directly to the needs of Alaska. We do not exist separate from Alaska. We are the university of and for Alaska. And the plan that you're about to see it directly allocates our resources, our focus, to the needs of the state and its people. So the five elements of the Regents' plan, which commences this year and goes out to 2025, are, you know, pretty straightforward: to drive economic development in the state, to provide a skilled Alaska workforce, growing our world-class research, increasing degree attainment, and critically important, to operate more cost-effectively. These are the five goals, as you see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The Regents have identified two ways in which we will track our progress toward each one of these goals. And as you see, they go all the way out to 2025. Some of these are quite ambitious. But I don't believe a goal is worth anything if it isn't ambitious. And I believe these are achievable, and I believe they are moving us at the university in the right direction. Specifically in terms of STEM graduates, and part of the strategy here is ANSEP. In fact, it's a key part of our increase of STEM science, technology, engineering, and math graduates. And this is a proposed increase over this period of time of 50%. Invention disclosures is a standard measure of research activity, and so we plan here to double invention disclosures. And it's a predicate to creation of new companies that are based on intellectual property developed by our faculty, students, and our staff. And this is a very high priority for us. And I'm pleased that at all three of our universities, we have things cooking, if you will, on the research side with economic development opportunities.
Mr. President, do you have any knowledge of some of the past invention disclosures?
I have some knowledge, Mr. Chairman, not detailed knowledge, but I can.
Please.
Some of them have to, well, blueberries, antioxidants. Wild blueberries in Alaska have very, very high levels of antioxidants, much higher than standard commercial blueberries. And so in fact, there's a company that has been formed by a faculty member is focusing on concentrations of those high oxidant values coming from wild Alaskan blueberries. So that's one example. There are numerous others, pavement technologies, over top permafrost in Alaska, and a long list of some of those.
Thank you.
In terms of workforce, you know, we will certainly continue to prepare the workforce in many, many, many areas of the state. Over 60% of our graduates, recall I mentioned in my introduction, about 4,600 completers past year, over 60% of those were in high demand workforce areas. And we will continue, of course, that strong commitment. But what we've done here is ask ourselves the question, if we get two of these jobs right, our state will be a better place, right? And teachers and healthcare. So we're looking to triple the percentage of the teachers hired in Alaska that are trained in Alaska. And we're proposing to double the number of healthcare program completions. We're already making improvements and increasing positions in healthcare programs at UAA. UAA is our lead campus for health programs, although we have CNA and other kinds of health training programs available all across Alaska. But UAA is our lead, particularly for nursing and other highly skilled healthcare occupations. And Jeff Jesse, I believe you know Jeff, is the dean there, very high energy, well connected, and we're moving out to drive those numbers up. With respect to teachers, two things are going to have to happen here, and just in terms of the math. One is we're going to work with our school districts across the state, 54 of them, I believe it is, to try to help them bring turnover rates down so that we'll bring the number of positions that we have to fill down over time and at the same time ramp up our rates of education at the University of Alaska, at all three of the universities. In the near term, our focus will strongly be in what we call post-baccalaureate preparation programs, master's degree and certificate programs that are geared to people already possessing a baccalaureate degree. And those are typically one-year programs and often include a teaching, student-teacher teaching experience during that year. Most of the coursework in those programs is online and via distance. So it's a way of getting folks into programs quickly. Another key focus here is increasing our preparation of rural and Alaska Native people for these programs so that we can hopefully bring down the turnover rate so that we're preparing people in the communities across the state for these important roles in their communities across Alaska. This is a critical job for us. I believe personally it's the single most important job in our state, and I think we can increase college going in Alaska, college graduation and college going in Alaska, and college going to the University of Alaska if we get more of our teachers in classrooms all across Alaska.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. President, this one line has the potential of having the greatest impact on Alaska. If you can go from hiring outside 70% of our teachers to hiring 10% of our teachers, what an enormous savings that will be to each and every school district. And it's very ambitious, and I know it's a goal, but the closer you can get to it, the better for all of Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Yeah, thank you. Recent estimate, you're probably aware of this, Senators, $20 million that school districts across the state spent yearly just on recruiting costs for new teachers. So if we can train more Alaska teachers, we'll bring that number down. number one. And number two, I think it'll have a tremendous impact in the classroom in terms of increased continuity of our teachers in those schools, so that those students have a long time connection with those important community leaders.
Senator Olson.
Can you repeat what the recruiting costs?
Senator Olson, can you speak into the mic, please?
Mr. President, can you just remind me what the number was for the, what the schools pay out for recruiting efforts?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Olson, an ICER study recently completed estimates $20 million a year incurred by the 54 school districts in Alaska for teacher recruitment costs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Bishop.
Just a comment to add to this discussion. You need to look no further than the Alaska Airlines magazine and see the advertisements for teachers in rural Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Bishop. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I must say I really appreciate the committee's interest in this. It is fundamental, I believe, for our state to really, if you will, own the preparation of these key professional areas, but particularly our teachers. They touch every single one of us. No matter what we do after high school, whether we go to college, whether we go into apprenticeship programs, whether we leave the state or stay in the state, these people teach every single one of us. And they need to be, as much as possible, Alaskans. On to research. We lead the world in Arctic-related research, and that is measured in two ways. One is publications in academic journals, and the other is citations in academic papers. And so we're just going to keep this real simple and continue to be number one. As I mentioned in some of my early remarks, there are multiple benefits that come from this. Certainly, our ability to recruit and retain top-notch faculty, researchers, and graduate students from all across the world and Alaska. There's a financial benefit here, ROI between $4 and $6 for each UGF dollar invested. The quality of what happens in our classrooms is enhanced. The undergraduate research opportunities that our students experience with top-notch faculty is unparalleled. And then again, the focus is on us. It's on living in the North, in the Arctic. And so the work these faculty and staff and graduate students and undergraduates do is directly tied to issues that that are important to us as Alaskans. And then another measure here is, and this is a standard measure that we use across the country in research universities, so it enables us to track how we're doing over time and also how we're doing vis-a-vis other universities, and that is, of course, research expenditures, and that is proposed to increase at the rate of 5% per year. We are being very strategic about our areas of emphasis as we look to primarily the federal government for support for our research, and we're moving strongly into the health sector in particular. That is one part of the federal research budget that continues to grow. As those in those political positions in Washington continue to age, we see that correlation. So, education attainment really is, I think, the heart of this plan adopted by the Board of Regents. So there are two elements here. One is to increase enrollment, and the other, the rate of graduation. Moving from, in 2017, our baseline 29,000 enrollment up to 45,000, it would be very reasonable for you to ask me, Johnson, are you nuts to be able to move from 29,000 to 45,000? That's a 50% increase. I have two responses to that. One is based on what we see in other states, where you'll see frequently 6 to 7% of a state's population students at that state's universities or in community colleges. We're at 4 today. And the second date, and if it were 6, it would be 45,000. The second way I look at this is back in 1975. So instead of looking at other states, let's look at our own history. And in 1975, 6.3% of Alaskans were students at the University of Alaska. So when I take those two benchmarks, one comparative and the other longitudinal, I'd say 45,000 is reasonable for us to achieve if we really invest and we really go after it. And that will take resources. There's no question. There are a number of strategies we have to go after those, including, I would note, not only traditional high school students coming onto the university through concurrent enrollment, dual enrollment, et cetera, but we also lead the nation in the percentage of our population with some college and no degree. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity to reach out to those people in our state. It's about 112,000 Alaskans in that situation.
Thank you, Bishop.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I won't say you're crazy, but I'll just ask you, can you, this 45,000 target, can you do that with existing capacity of bricks and mortar, or have you thought that far down the line?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, excellent question. We do have bricks and mortar capacity for the next several years, and I think you raise a very good question, and it goes to the opportunities that come from online education. It's not the solution to everything. We still want to make sure that we have opportunities for hands-on learning. I'm thinking of some of the trades, for example, where you know you're not going to learn welding online. So there still will be bricks and mortar needs for us going forward. But a lot of the growth, particularly in this cohort or this group I just talked to you about, these folks with some college and no degree, they're not quitting their jobs and quitting their families to come move into our dorms and go to class Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 to 12:30. These people are going to be taking online courses in the evenings, weekends, on their own time, self-paced courses delivered asymmetrically. And that's not going to require traditional brick-and-mortar classrooms. Now, there are hybrids, and we see a lot of our courses that are hybrid in that there will be a history class being taught at Kodiak, and there'll be eight students sitting there from Kodiak College or perhaps Kenai campus, and then there'll be 10 students dialing in online from all across the state. So there'll still be some mix of need there. But I do believe we have some few years where we do have the capacity to deal with it. I would sure hope that, again, broadband connectivity, particularly to some of the rural communities of Alaska, continues to increase. We're very excited about Nome and Kotzebue now gaining access to high-speed fiber. We'd sure like to see that in Bethel moving forward. But yeah, those, and the second piece of this is completions, and that is throughput, really, if you will, through the university. And we've got to step that up, and that is proposed to increase also by 50% over current rates.
Mr. Chairman, can
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Stevens and Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you're really on the right track for completions. I know there are a lot of folks who have a large Coast Guard population, a lot of folks who are getting taking classes online out of state. And just if we could attack that one population that are going out of state to get a class online just as easily from the University of Alaska, I think there's a large number there.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, absolutely correct. Let me just share with you a little number. 400 non-Alaskans are taking online programs at the University of Alaska, so outsiders taking our courses. 6,000 Alaskans are taking online programs from outside Alaska. That's a 15-fold delta. And the term you used, attack, is exactly the word that I use when I talk with our people about getting out there and marketing and recruiting. I mean, I do hear, and I'll bet you do too, many more advertisements on the radio for Arizona State University than you do us. And we have benefited from some of our private funding to increase our own marketing of our programs, but we've really got to step that up.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Along that note, there is a federal government program called E-Rate, and I believe it's a 7-to-1 match. So if a state puts in $100 million, then the federal government will match $700 million to expand broadband into smaller communities. And you talked about Nome and Kotzebue and so forth, and as we've seen Quintillion, mm-hmm. when they made their announcement, they're putting fiber optic cable in the Barrow area and points in that area. But it's, again, it's the Bethel, Kotzebue, Nome, and the small villages surrounding that area. Would UAA or UA be willing to help contribute towards that 10%? And we're looking at the school districts to do that as well, to help us with that E-rate match. I don't know if there's within your budget technology money to help enhance that connectivity, because I know that there is a bill that was dropped by Senator McKinnon last year, and I'm very eager to take opportunities with that bill while that E-rate program is still alive.
Through the chair, Senator von Imhoff, I'd like to follow up on that. We are certainly paying for connectivity to our campuses now, and that those payments we're making are going to commercial bandwidth providers who I believe are benefiting from those E-rate subsidies. But I think I'd like to get that detail. I don't have that top of mind. But we do spend significant sums on connectivity in our rural campuses.
Thank you, Senator von Imhoff. Mr. President, please proceed.
Thank you, sir. Goal Area 5 is, these are ambitious goals, but this is not an area of proposed investment. This is really representing what we hope to be the outcome of increased enrollment, increased revenue coming in from research and enrollment, while our costs are staying low. So that's the simple strategy here: increase revenues, increase the top line faster than we increase our costs, and as a result, we will become more efficient. Now, I'd note the Regents are holding us to these numbers here, and so there are strong expectations that we will be able to achieve these. And I would also note before I leave this slide that this is for the system level for the state of Alaska, the University of Alaska overall. And we are working closely with the campuses on their specific numbers that align with these numbers. And then the campuses, of course, are working with their subsidiary units, colleges, community campuses, et cetera, on their numbers. They don't roll down in a proportional way. They roll down in ways that make sense based on their specific strength and specific contribution. So, for example, UAF is our lead research university. We will expect UAF to take the heavy load here vis-a-vis research and moving that up. UAA leads in health programs, so we would expect UAA to take a disproportionate responsibility, burden, if you will, or role to meet these health program numbers here.
Thank you for this presentation, particularly on this page. That is quite ambitious between now and 2025, and I look forward to working with you now and until then and your board to get these accomplished.
Senator, I appreciate that opportunity, and I look forward to being at this table in 2024 and 2025 celebrating our success. So thank you for that. This goes into a little bit more detail, slide 13. There are two pieces. 317 is our base 18 operating budget, so that's how we begin. Compensation, we are proposing no compensation increases for FY19. Our collective bargaining agreements do not provide for compensation increases. We have a very large group of non-unionized employees at the University of Alaska, and they're not seeing compensation increases. And I just highlight that our folks don't have steps either. So when I put a zero here, it's a zero. It's not 3.75% steps that are occurring behind the scenes. It's a zero. Now, this is, I think, fiscally prudent. It is increasingly a challenge for us, however, because as our economy cycles in a countercyclical way compared to other states and other universities in those states, we are getting poached. So while faculty, particularly faculty who operate on a national and international market, labor market, those rates are inflating, ours are not. So I am concerned about that particular piece. We are able to deal with specific issues now in terms of retention. We do have an agreement with our faculty union in particular to provide those, but that's increasingly a concern.
Senator Stevens, do you have a comment?
No.
Okay. Please proceed.
Moving forward, in terms of fixed cost increases, $9.7 million. So you see the areas of investment we would be making, facility maintenance, utility costs. These are primarily, I believe, in Anchorage. There have been a significant increase in utility rates there, and so this a lot of this goes to UAA. Then, of course, the new engineering building at the University of Alaska Fairbanks has operating costs. And then we need to keep up with what's happening across the world in terms of research and discovery. And so we have an increase here for subscription increases. And again, these cover all of our institutions statewide. And then
how does the new facility to provide energy for the main campus in Fairbanks affect these utility costs?
The utility costs here, Senator, are primarily focused on the Anchorage campus. The UAF facility, of course, the new facility there will be providing both heat and power to the UAF facility. So,
are you going to be addressing that later on in your
presentation? Yes, we have a detail piece in our facilities presentation on that. We've already gone through some of these, the goals for the strategic investments. And here the top line basically amounts that we would propose be invested in each one of these areas, economic development, workforce, research. And as you see, the lion's share would be going into educational and degree attainment. Much of this is in areas of K-12 outreach, so connecting with our K-12 partners to strengthen that funnel to increase high school graduation rates and to increase college going rates through dual and concurrent enrollment programs, marketing, ANSEP would be another, RAHI, those sorts of programs that have proven their effectiveness in bringing students to us. Middle College High School is another example of a very successful program. Those young people who complete the Middle College High School, 75% of them go on to the University of Alaska, and they on average have 30 semester credit hours in their pockets, requiring no developmental or sometimes what we used to call remedial education. So very, very efficient investments there. And so that's where the lion's share of that would be invested. And then as you see, reflecting my statement just a moment ago, we would be asking for no investment in cost effectiveness.
Are these listed in any priority or they aren't?
They're all top priority, Senator. we can certainly address that, you know, as we move forward here. The core of this is getting the students in. Getting prepared students into the university is critically important to us. And hence, while certainly the top line here contributing to the state's economic development is key to our mission, the heart of this, as I indicated a few moments ago, is increasing enrollment and increasing completion. Everything else will benefit from that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Moving on away from some of the substantive pieces of the budget, I would just note that a couple programs have been moved out of statewide. We addressed in some detail in a joint meeting recently of the House and Senate Education Committees various efficiency moves that we have made and reorganization moves that we've made over the last number of years. And specifically in statewide administration, we continue to have governance responsibilities and service responsibilities, but we have moved all program responsibilities to the campuses. If it touches a student, if it touches a faculty member, in my view, it should not be in statewide administration. It needs to be on a university campus. And here are a couple of examples. The K-12 outreach program, which provides really valuable and effective mentoring services to new teachers in the state. But secondly, our mining and petroleum training service, great program training young people to work in the mines here in Alaska. And those have been moved onto the campuses. And then a couple of moves here, in structural moves in the budget document. We have a university foundation. It's a private 501c3 corporation whose sole reason for existence is to raise private money to support the university. And so we're proposing that they have a separate allocation and that it would not be included in the statewide budget Those are all, they're privately funded. So no general funds go into the operation of the foundation, and that's about $4 million ballpark with about 25 staff. And then we have an education trust, again, a privately supported group of small group of seven folks who manage the Alaska College Savings Program, and we would propose that that be a separate allocation as well. So sort of technical pieces.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Many universities around the world, large ones with big foundation funds, are facing some concerns over the changes in income tax. Will that have an impact on our foundation or on the trust funds?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, a couple of things there. The major impact on some of the big endowments is that they're going to be taxed, and it's a matter of their size per student. So the Harvards and the Princetons and those endowments are going to be subject to a tax. We do not have the benefit of having an endowment that big, so we're not going to be subject to that tax. That said, the increase in the standard deduction may have an impact on charitable donations across the board, but it may have an impact on our charitable donations as well. We don't know what that'll be at this point, but we're certainly carefully looking at that. And that, you're right, that's affecting universities and charitable organizations all across the country.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to hear that the foundation will not be affected by the new tax laws.
Yeah, I would like to have that problem, but because it's a matter of having a big foundation.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Here, slide 15, are some details regarding the fixed cost increases. So $3.7 million in facility maintenance, $3.1 million in utility costs, and $2.1 million in operations of the new engineering facility at Fairbanks, and then the library resources mentioned above. Healthcare management, there were some questions from members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, regarding the university's health costs, and I think perhaps how it is that the university has been able to manage its costs so effectively compared to other publicly funded organizations in the state. And we share our health costs with our employees. It's an 82% of net plan costs we pick up as an employer, and employees pick up 18% of the cost. And we have had very favorable experience with our health plan. And so in just a moment, you'll see a slide that describes that. We also do a lot of wellness program support and a lot of education of our employees. And I believe that the cost sharing formula, high deductibles, along with education and wellness program are explanations for why our health costs are low compared to others and increasing at a lower rate than others. And that's described on this slide here, slide 17. The university is the green line. The Alaska Care and Related Groups, the red line. The blue line is the general government unit of the state. And the yellow line are school districts. So I believe that we really attempt to bend Alaska's high healthcare cost curve down by responsibly managing our costs, number one. Two, by conducting research into health, and three, by training an Alaska workforce for high-demand healthcare jobs in the state. Here are just the numbers. I don't know that we want to spend time on this slide, but this describes to you exactly what it is that we're spending over the last 4 years and our projection for next year. But again, you see constant here the share of the health costs that the employer picks up at 82% and the employee share at 18%. Now, the employee cost has been increasing, not only because of general health care inflation, but also because we're spreading that cost out over fewer people based on the significant reduction in headcount. Travel management, that's been an emphasis here, and since FY14, we brought our travel costs down by 28%, so $6.3 million. We are also working on a new travel management system that'll go live late this summer, early fall. So we're very, very happy about that. We have been streamlining regulations and our processes there so that when we do automate this new system, it'll be a streamlined, user-friendly system. We're also collaborating with the state and trying to leverage some of its negotiated discounts with some of the major travel providers in the state. So good progress being made on this front. And I think a big piece of this is the increased use of communication technology, video conferencing, and the like. A question arose from the committee in terms of our labor agreements. We have six employee groups, five represented by collective bargaining, and one non-represented. You see here the description of the specific units. We have three faculty units, a firefighters unit, and a crafts and trade unit. They're all under contract, and then you see here the number of employees in each one of these units. I would note that for years we have had discussions ongoing with two of the faculty units, the University of Alaska Federation of Teachers, or UAFT, second from the bottom on this slide, and United Academics. There has been a recent resolution such that a lot of the members of the UAFT are moving into the United Academic Unit, and then there are continued discussions of a potential consolidation of those units. It's a very amicable discussion there, but it would, I think, really streamline university administration of the terms and conditions of employment if we're able to reach an agreement there.
So I see we have the Fairbanks Firefighters Union. How is this service that is being provided up in Fairbanks different than the service that is provided for coverage in Anchorage?
Mr. Chairman, this firefighter, fire station is a university-operated fire station. UAA does not have its own fire service, so it depends on the municipality for its service in the event of a fire. Now, both campuses do have both law enforcement at both campuses and their own officers, but that's the key difference. UAF has its own fire service, and it's integrated with an academic program, which has very successfully trained firefighters for fire services all across Alaska for many years.
Thank you.
In terms of other legislative priorities, I think you're aware of our education tax credits in Alaska. That law sunsets in December of 2018, and we're seeking extension of the law. It has provided strong benefits to the University of Alaska, certainly financially, but I think more importantly in terms of the relationship between donor organizations, and the university. So mining companies, at-sea processors, banks, and other organizations in the state have supported the university in terms of research, in terms of workforce, and other kinds of programs. And it really brings us together with them in a strong and powerful way. And we certainly strongly support extension of the education tax credit program. And I believe that there are bills both here in this body and a bill over in the other body that would accomplish that extension. So it is, while a complicated statute because it applies to seven different corporate taxes, and there are some variations within each one of those taxes. The concept is extremely simple, simply extending. We understand and appreciate some of the complexity in the current statute and would be pleased to work with the committee and others on, you know, clarification and simplification of the law. But we certainly believe that it would be more important to extend and then fix than the other way around. And then finally, the Higher Education Fund, that was established some years ago, and it earnings from that fund support two really important scholarship programs, one a merit-based scholarship program, Alaska Performance Scholarship, and the second, the Alaska Education Grant, a needs-based scholarship program. The first has really stepped up, I think, the readiness of Alaska's high school graduates when they go to college. And so we received not only this benefit in terms of tuition, $12 million a year, but it's enabled us to bring down our developmental education costs, and it helps those students move through our programs more quickly. The education grant, we're among the lowest states in the country in the amount of publicly provided needs-based financial aid. So we feel this is a critical program as well, and is often the tipping point. It really decides whether a young person is going to go on to college or not.
On the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program, do you have what the dropout rate is of that program?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that number handy, but I'm happy to get that number. I believe that was a question also posed by the senators and the Senate Education Committee. So we're chasing that number down.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think you're...
Chairman,
I'm sorry.
I can just add
Senator Stevens.
Not only the Alaska Performance Scholarship, but also the needs-based, if we could get those that information as well on dropout.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Finally, you know, I began by talking about the land grant and how we are a land grant university without the land. And only Delaware received a smaller public land grant than we did. And, you know, Connecticut, Rhode Island got bigger land grants than we did, strangely enough. But in any case, it's a long history. Don't need to go through the gory details there. But there is a historic land grant deficit. We are working very closely with the congressional delegation to address that deficit. We do appreciate that some of you were members of this body back in 2005 when legislation was passed to grant the university state lands. But in 2009, that action was deemed unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court. It found that the land grant was covered by the non-dedication clause of the state constitution. So we're working again closely with the congressional delegation and the administration here to remedy that challenge. So it's not going to solve fiscal problems for us next week, but 5 years out, 10 years out, I think will make a big difference for us. I would note here, too, that we are being very active in developing our lands today, working with state agencies, working with federal agencies to actually increase our activity there. We are very responsible forceful, I suppose, land developer, but we're working very closely with communities as well. So we think we do a good job of this, and we'll continue to do so. Proceeds from this activity fund our Alaska Scholars Program. Recall the top 10% of Alaska's high school graduates get a tuition scholarship, and those funds come from our land development.
What consideration, if any, has been given to changing the Constitution to allow for that legislation to pass?
Mr. Chairman, we have done some sort of legal thinking about it, but we have not done any sort of political assessment of that possibility.
Thank you.
So that concludes the presentation on the operating budget. I'd now like to hand it to Vice President Rizik to provide an overview of deferred maintenance, an important part of our budget request on the capital side. And I know an area of high interest for members of the committee. Michelle?
Good morning. Funding for deferred maintenance has been a Board of Regents priority for many years. Funding for deferred maintenance protects the state's investments in facilities at the University of Alaska, which is critical to improve safety and efficiency and avoid unnecessary costs. It also reduces the risk of catastrophic system failure. It lowers the long-term costs by extending the lifespan. It improves the overall appearance of the campus to students. And it also attracts world-class faculty and researchers with the state-of-the-art lab and classroom space. You'll see on this chart here, that's our facilities profile. We have 426 facilities located throughout the state. I'll point out on there our deferred maintenance, renewal, and repurposing backlog is around $1 billion. If you look at that per square foot, it's actually comparable to other state agencies. Earlier in the presentation, the president talked about the $3.7 million that we have in the operating budget request for facilities maintenance. So there's two parts of maintenance at the university that we've been focused on. One is the day-to-day annual maintenance, which the board has set a long-term target of $60 million at, which currently we're spending about $35 to $45 million on. So if we got to a $60 million target, that would get us in a situation where we're not adding to the backlog. The money that's requested in the capital budget helps us pay down that $1 billion backlog. So anything that's we receive in the capital budget pays that down. If we don't get money in the operating budget to take care of the day-to-day maintenance, then that backlog continues to grow. The $60 million target that we're working on is approximately 1.6% of our current value. That's less than the industry standard recommendation of 2.5%, but we're setting a goal of 1.6% with the intent of getting there over the next few years. The next chart shows the funding that we've received for deferred maintenance over the last, since FY09. You'll see in there that we bonded, the Board of Regents bonded for $50 million in FY12. And then in FY17, you'll see there was no funding received there. The Board of Regents, recognizing the importance of facility maintenance funding, reallocated funds there. The funding that we received from the legislature, the five-year commitment, you'll see starting in FY11, that was really critical for the university in planning over the long term our facility maintenance projects.
Thank you.
This slide just goes into, again, like I talked about earlier, the difference between the funding that we have in the operating budget for facilities and then the funding that we have in the capital budget. And then these are some of the definitions that we use when we talk about facility funding. And again, we have maintenance, which is the day-to-day preventive maintenance. And then when you're not keeping up with your day-to-day maintenance, then it turns into deferred maintenance. Also for us at the University of Alaska, because of the, as I mentioned earlier, trying to attract students and also world-class researchers so that they can be competitive for receiving federal funds. Some of the funding is used for repurposing existing space to meet those current needs. Prioritization of, so we have a system-wide facility council, and these are the issues that we focus on across the state with our facility people. So we look at how we can reduce our operating costs, preventive maintenance, reducing deferred maintenance, renewal and repurposing, and reducing off-campus leases, and then space utilization efforts. We recently sold the 707 A Street in downtown Anchorage, and that was an example of an effort that we did to reduce our footprint. So right there, we took 20,000 gross square feet off of our books, so we reduced our operating costs. In addition to that, we had $9.5 million worth of deferred maintenance on that facility, and so by selling that facility, we were able to address two of those issues.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So when the university sells a property, do you need to get legislative approval prior to each one of those properties?
Through the chair, Regent Von Imhoff, we do not get permission to sell those facilities.
You just sell them?
Yes.
If I may hop in, we do get approval from the Board of Regents. So
okay.
they definitely, and there are clear policies regarding the amount. So we can, small facilities, not that, you know, not that expensive, we can sell on our own, notifying the Regents. But if it's, I believe it's $1 million, then we need their permission to sell the facility.
Senator Von Imhoff.
The proceeds that you get from the sale goes where?
So it depends how the property was acquired. So if the property is part of the land grant, by statute, the proceeds are deposited into the land grant trust fund, which is an endowment. If the property is not part of that, it goes into a quasi-endowment, which is our inflation-proofing fund, and unless there's otherwise directed by the board of or the president. So, for example, with 707 A Street, when UAA sold that and the proceeds were $1 million, UAA requested the Board of Regents if they could use that funding to address deferred maintenance issues that they had on campus.
Okay. Senator Von Imhoff.
It's just interesting in that we're considering a bill for the Alaska Railroad to dispose some of their properties. And so I'm just curious to see how other state-funded organizations dispose of their properties, just to use it as a framework by which we evaluate this particular bill. So what you're telling me, though, is that the proceeds don't necessarily go straight to operations. They go to the one or two funds that you mentioned? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, I would like to add, we do a public notice in response to Senator Von Imhoff's question about selling our facilities. We do have a public notice period that we go through before those facilities are sold.
Please proceed.
So when looking at the facilities funding that we do receive, this just goes over the list of how we prioritize the funding. So we start with if we have any safety or regulatory or code requirements. Then we look at the programmatic mission requirements, look at ways that the improvements would reduce the energy costs or generate operating cost savings, and then also look at system or component reliability and remaining operational life. And you can also see on there, you know, we do take into consideration appearance, like I mentioned, to remain relevant to our students, but that's toward the bottom of the list. As I mentioned earlier, we also continue to look at ways to reduce our footprint and our long-term operating costs for our facilities. This is specifically, there was questions on the UAF heat and power plant, and Mr. Chairman, as we mentioned earlier, if there's some specific detailed questions, we do have our facilities lead at UAF that's on the line. But the UAF combined heat and power plant, it's on track and on budget. It's planned to be operational in November. There's the detail of the cost, $248 million with a mix of funding sources associated with that. There was a question about, as part of our deferred maintenance list, is there anything remaining that's part of the combined heat and power plant? So you'll see down at the bottom there's still $7 million of the remaining facility that's on that list, and then $14 million of deferred maintenance for the heat and power distribution system.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So we are also receiving presentations on the Interior Energy Project and about how gas is being trucked or rail via railroad to Fairbanks and the surrounding communities. I think that having an anchor tenant, potentially UA, Fairbanks, UAF, would be help the project in the future. But I see that this is going to be a coal-fired furnace. Is there any way to convert it to gas eventually? And if so, do you by chance have those costs and the a quick description of what would be the incentive to do so?
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Von Imhoff. Coal is clearly the most cost-effective fuel for that facility, no question about it. There has been modeling done for potential natural gas. This might be a very good opportunity for Scott Bell up at UAF to provide a quick response to the question, and then we can follow up with much more detail for you. Scott?
Mr. Bell?
Hi, this is Scott Bell. And yes, we certainly did a a thorough investigation of different fuel sources before choosing coal. Coal's much less expensive than the alternatives. The new plant, the new boiler that we're building, could be converted to burn natural gas. We know it would be in the millions of dollars to do it. We don't know how much. And would really come down to there's a big economic component of making that decision.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Would you feel comfortable stating what that economic tipping point might be in terms of price per unit?
When we did the studies 7 years ago, it was in the $10 to $12 range, and which is significantly less than gases coming into Fairbanks this time.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate those comments. You know, those of us who don't live in Fairbanks often hear about the air pollution issues in that community. Is this going to be adding to that, a coal-fired plant?
Mr. Bell?
No, actually, it will be reducing all currently regulated emissions, the NOxes and the SOxes, the PM2.5s, et cetera. The central power plants, the large power plants, including the one UAF runs now in the Fairbanks area, are highly regulated, and you know, we work real hard to keep the emission levels low already.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Bishop?
Yes. President Johnson, I'll throw this your way first, and then you got two lifelines there that can answer if you don't have it on the tip of your tongue, but early on when we were debating the capital expenditures for the power plant, I thought I was going off of memory. The annual savings to the university by having a new plant was in the $5 million a year annual savings range. Am I accurate or am I completely off base?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, thank you for foreshadowing my need for lifelines. I don't have that off the tip of my tongue, and I don't know if you can respond, Michelle.
If I may, through the chair, Senator Bishop, and then I would ask Mr. Bell to add on to this. Yes, there were some anticipated utility savings from the new combined heat and power plant, and as time has progressed now, I would ask Mr. Bell what that's looking like at this point. And that was going to help pay the bond payment for UAF associated with this facility, those utility savings. So those have already been programmed in. But Mr. Bell, if Mr. Chairman, if
Mr.
you could.
Mr. Bell. Mr. Bell, are you online? Can you address? Oh. Mr. Bell's offline.
Okay.
They can get back to us, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted that back on the record for some of our newer members that weren't here during that discussion, the annual savings.
Please proceed. Ms. Erzik, does that conclude your presentation?
Mr. Chairman, it does. Thank you.
Mr. President, do you have any closing comments on your presentation?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I can summarize it very quickly. First point, we Alaskans have a great university with tremendous assets. Second, our state and the university, we certainly face serious challenges. The third point is that continued disinvestment will only lead to continued decline in our capacity to serve the state. And with modest investment, as proposed here by the Board of Regents and the administration of the university, strategic investment, we can grow in service to Alaska. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And as a graduate of the University of Alaska, the university has done a tremendous job in the service to the people of Alaska. And hopefully we will continue to see that excellent service. Senator Bishop, did you have a comment?
I just have some editorial comments on the university. I was writing these down just to, in the essence of time. There are a lot of slides to go through here to make sure you got through your presentation. But on page 13, you don't have to turn there. You know, we talk about – increasing our workforce and workforce development training. You know, I did a lot of work on that a while back, and you know, there's rumblings out there that we're closer and closer and closer to maybe having a gas pipeline. So those 12 to 20,000 direct indirect jobs aren't going anywhere. They're still going to be there, and I think that's good that you're still keeping that on your focus going forward. Also, the education tax credit, you know, that's a big one. That's up for reauthorization, you know, and it doesn't go without saying that you're a mining university, and it doesn't surprise me one bit that the mining industry needs to be recognized and thanked for being one of your major donors to that, and I'm proud to support that extension. Also, I won't belabor the point, but everybody here at the table knows how much I hate deferred maintenance, and hopefully we can get on a pathway to help you bend that curve in the right way. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, I know it's a very small program, the WAMI program, but I think all of us are very proud of the fact that it produces general practitioners that now come back to Alaska. I was first involved in it. I remember almost all the training was done outside of Alaska. Now I understand more is done actually here in Anchorage. Could you comment on that? What we're actually doing locally rather than sending students outside the University of Washington?
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stevens, I believe 2 years of the education now is done here in Alaska at UAA, and then the students go down to University of Washington, complete the program, but then come back up and do residencies in Alaska. Those students who do residencies here in Alaska stay in Alaska at a very high rate. So it has certainly been a very, very successful program.
Thank you, Mr. President. That's and we should be very proud of that, but we have enormous needs here in Alaska for medical doctors, and I would love to see us increase that. I know it takes funding, but it's something we desperately need.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Any closing comments, Mr. President?
Thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you for that excellent presentation. Tomorrow we will continue the Senate Finance Committee meeting in this room at 9 o'clock. We will be having a presentation on the PERS and TERS overview by the Department of Administration. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Bless you, Senator Von Imhoff. Anything else? If not, we stand adjourned.